You're listening to Seeking Office, the Vancouver Municipal Election Podcast.
For everyone here today and everyone listening at home, I have good news. In all ways and at every level, we are going to take back our city. The Vancouver that we love. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Wei Young, and I'm here to announce that I want to be mayor of the city of Vancouver.
Vancouver's Nonpartisan Association, or NPA, has been described by former board member Mike Lount as a party in full decline. Both NPA sitting board member Hector Bremner and former Conservative MP Wei Young vied for the party's leadership only to be turned away. In the wake of their departure from the NPA, two new civic parties were born, Hector's Yes Vancouver and Wei's Coalition Vancouver. Both parties see themselves as more progressive, though still fiscally conservative alternatives to the NPA. The News Collective's Alex DeBoer spoke with Coalition Vancouver's president and former NPA board member Peter Labrie about his new party and how it differs from Vancouver's other center-right options.
Well, thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
Sure, of course.
So could you start off by telling me your name and your role within Coalition Vancouver?
My name is Peter Labrie. I'm the president of Coalition Vancouver.
Excellent. And can you tell me a bit about what being the president of a civic party or society in this case means, sort of on the day-to-day?
Well, I guess in terms of the policy, I'm also on the board, so I set the larger policy with the other board members. And I'm also involved with the process of finalizing the slate of candidates. And I also am involved with the policy, talking to strategists, and putting together the communications, basically running the party.
Mm-hmm. So as part of the board, do you have sort of more say than other board members being the president?
Well, it's quite democratic, really. I listen to everyone and they listen to me. It's an open dialogue.
Okay. So Coalition Vancouver is technically a society, and I was wondering if you can tell our listeners briefly how that's different from being a political party.
Well, it's an entity that's used for political parties. Actually, I think that's a normal sort of an entity for a political activity. You can do it within a society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar to the NPA. So, speaking of the NPA, I was wondering if you could tell me about your departure from the NPA. I believe you left after their November AGM. Could you tell me a bit about what happened, why you left?
Well, I actually ran for another term. I had a very short term. It was a term open for 1 year, and at the end of the year, I ran for a second term. I didn't manage to get the votes, and at that time, I was actually having some questions about the party, the policy. So to make a long story short, one, I didn't get the votes, and then I also left the party afterwards completely.
Okay. And could you tell me why you decided to leave the party?
Well, it's not just the NPA. We feel, you know, other members of Coalition Vancouver, we don't feel the traditional parties are really doing a very good job of representing the people. So we started a whole new party.
Right. So it's not necessarily particular to the NPA.
Well, I think the NPA is kind of, I think the NPA vision, COPE, I don't think any of them are actually representing the interests of the people of Vancouver. So we wanted to have a party that was more inclusive, more collaborative, accountable, transparent, a party that's, for common sense and for the average person.
Okay. So I know you had originally backed Wei Young to run as a front runner for the NPA.
Right.
At what point did she leave?
Well, she was actually, it was sort of a mutual process in the sense I looked at all the candidates and she was definitely the best. For a number of reasons, she decided that, and we decided that we would be better off forming our own party. And so we struck off on our own.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for clarifying. So then how many other former NPA members have now joined Coalition Vancouver? I think a press release you had said 8. Is that correct?
Oh, those are ones that are well known, but there are hundreds more. We're actually getting members all the time. In fact, there's a very senior member that's going to be announcing very shortly, probably today or tomorrow, that he's leaving as well. So we're getting people from the MPA all the time.
I don't know if you can answer this, but are there any updates on Glenn Chernin? Will he be joining you?
I think Glenn is going to be announcing his, you know, what he's doing in the future fairly soon. You know, in out of respect for Glenn, that's his decision how he communicates that to the public. But Glenn's a good man, and we would certainly welcome him into our organization.
Okay, yeah. Just thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
So about a month ago, reporter Frances Beulah tweeted a quote from Mike Lount, who is, as you know, a current coalition member and a former MPA board member.
Sure.
And he described the MPA as being in full decline. And obviously you agreed with him on Twitter, although in response, NPA counselor George Affleck said that what Frances had tweeted was actually factually incorrect. The quote itself was factually incorrect, and that the MPA has thousands of new members. So I'm just wondering, do you know if that's true, or is Affleck misrepresenting the party, the current MPA party?
You know, I'm not a party to their membership list right now. I know George, and I've got a lot of respect for George, and he's very loyal to the MPA. So I can't really, not having the data in front of me, I can't really comment on George's tweet. I don't comment on other people's tweets generally anyway.
I'm wondering how the MPA, the NDP's new ban on corporate and union donations on municipal parties and, you know, the cap on individual donations has sort of shaped the municipal landscape in your perspective, perhaps specifically with the NPA and with Coalition Vancouver.
Well, how's it shaped it? In the past, I mean, not that long ago, if you look at the contributions from real estate developers, for example, if you look at Vision, I think something like 70 or 74% of their donations came from, you know, really a cluster of real estate organizations, big corporate sponsors. Similar to the, you know, the MPA were very similar to that. I think it's over 70%. So that's over. Now you have to have basically 1,200 per school board maximum and 1,200 individually for the party. So that really limits it. It makes it much more difficult to raise large sums. You can't go to the same sources and get large sums of money. It's more, it flattens the playing field to some extent.
Yeah, and do you think that contributes to sort of the erosion of the two main parties that have held the most power in Vancouver, Vision and the MPA?
Well, it certainly makes it harder for them to raise money, but also I don't think that's the main reason, actually. I don't think their message resonates with anyone, whether it's the MPA or whether it's Vision. The message certainly doesn't resonate with anyone. I mean, if you look at what's happening to the city, you can see that housing has more than doubled in the past decade, where salaries have increased barely 36%. Traffic is a disaster. According to TomTom, we have the worst traffic of any city in North America. It's even worse than L.A. You also see that basic cost of living now, according to The Economist, is the highest of any city in North America. It's also the least affordable. The city budget has grown 61% in the last decade. The debt is more than doubled to $2 billion. And though the budget has increased 61%, the population has increased around 6%. So its expenses are growing 10 times faster than the population. Homelessness is up.
Mm-hmm.
And young people are leaving in droves. If you look at the GB Greater Vancouver Board of Trade report, it says that that our post-secondary education, the number of people that have it now has dropped to 34%. It has to be over 50 to be competitive as a knowledge center.
Right.
And also, if you look at the taxes for the city, the GB BOT rates the 20 major cities in the world. And we have the highest taxes, the single highest taxes.
Right.
So, I mean, there's so many things that don't work that we feel it's time for a party that's based on common sense.
Right. So in a response to all those problems, obviously we have Wei Yang's party, your party, Coalition Vancouver, but we also have Hector Bremner's party, Yes Vancouver, who interestingly is also an ex-NPA member. And so both parties have described themselves as being centrist. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit more about the differences between Yes Vancouver and Coalition Vancouver.
Oh, there are lots of differences. First of all, Hector is, you know, he's a lobbyist for a number of different organizations, you know, and a lot of those are real estate companies. There's no question about that. We don't have any of those alliances at all. Mm. We're completely for, you know, the people. We also, in terms of our policy, we've come out with, on a progressive weekly basis, updates, but we have a firm policy that are going to address all of the major issues. The other parties, at least I haven't seen anything nearly as firm in terms of how they're going to address the major issues. So we have the clarity, we have the people, and we don't have the legacy or the, we don't owe any, we don't have any IOUs. We're not supported by big business.
Right, right. Okay, interesting. And so the rest of your platform and how Coalition Vancouver intends to deal with the housing crisis, when can Vancouverites expect to hear that?
Yeah, the housing is, we have some, you know, this is an interesting topic for me, and it's actually hard for me to keep quiet on it because we have a policy. We're coming out with it very soon. It's going to be rolled out. But what I can tell you is that we have firm ideas on how to give a path to ownership for people of modest income, and particularly for millennials, the people between 18 and 35, so that they can see themselves staying in the city, having affordable rent, and having a path to ownership, being able to buy something, their own place, within a reasonable period of time. We also feel that the rental market is underdeveloped. The emphasis has been on developing high-end condominiums. We want to see a much more robust rental market so that 40-50% of the population can find reasonable accommodation in the city.
Right.
So they can stay in the city.
And would that involve rezoning, or can you say?
Well, I can't say on rezoning except to say the rezoning, I think if you look at the data on it, the last time that there was a comprehensive review, I think it was done in 1994 and it was released in 1995. So there's been no attempt to update the city plan since 1995, or no comprehensive plan. So the zoning is, and actually a lot of that is dated back to the Second World War because a lot of it was left untouched. So the zoning is something that we'd have to look at, but it would have to be done in a very gentle, collaborative, progressive manner involving all the communities. There's something like 28 community associations in Vancouver. Maybe 20 of those are like super active. You would want to get all of those people and the real estate industry and different community groups, the individuals involved in that process. Zoning is something that with the city plan, just call it the plan, has to be reviewed. Other thing is you have to look at, and Wei Yang's been really clear on this. She says there's 107. I know there's over 100 different forms that have to be and steps that have to be taken to get approval on any project in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And that's why our approval times are four times longer than our neighboring cities. It's because there's just a lot of red tape. And that means that when you do have a good idea, it takes 3 to 4 years to bring it to fruition. So, I mean, we're looking at a lot of ideas, and we borrowed a lot of ideas from people like Patrick Condon, who's a planner out at UBC, a nice guy, and he's got some great ideas. We're looking at his, but we're pulling ideas in from everywhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned Patrick Condon, who was, you know, most likely going to be the COPE mayoral candidate.
Yeah.
And I know that you've described Coalition Vancouver as being progressive and taking in ideas from the left as well. So would you say that your coming housing strategy will be an example of those maybe more progressive ideologies? Or what about the party and its platform and ideology currently can be testament to an openness to more ideologically left views?
Wow, that's a long question. we like Patrick. I like him. He's an interesting person. He's having some health issues right now, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We you know, left or right, actually we don't think that common sense is on the left or on the right. It's just kind of in the middle. We want to put the emphasis on a collaborative, accountable, transparent type of a government. So that means that you're going to have ideas coming from everywhere. I mean, after all, it's a coalition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way we look at it, we're not the left, we're not the right, we're the middle. We're the common sense middle.
Right. But what specifically about the party and its platform puts you in the middle?
Well, I think in terms of, for example, real estate, we just talked about real estate. Wei, for example, is very interested in looking at what we call the Vienna model of rental, which is where quite a large portion of the rental pool of the city is actually owned or controlled by the city, and it's provided at a reasonable level, a reasonable cost. Okay? I guess you would consider that to be more of a progressive policy. Mm-hmm. We also want to provide more housing, which is designed for people of more modest income and people that are starting out. That's also something that's more of a Patrick Condon or a progressive idea.
Right.
And we also want to get rid of the red tape, make it easier for good ideas to come out. We also want to get the communities involved with the zoning so that now we don't have a zoning that's 23 years old. And when your zoning is as old as it is, or when you're city plan is as old as it is, then you find that there are a lot of things that are being considered that just simply don't fit in because they're using a plan that's too old. We want to basically update and get everyone on the same page so they feel comfortable with the types of developments that are going to be presented in the future.
Right. So this is a very unique election. As you know, there are few incumbents running, lots of new parties or three new parties,
yeah,
and new candidates running. And so it looks like most likely there won't be one party that holds a majority on council. So I'm wondering, how does coalition plan to work with those of differing political views if coalition members are elected?
I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get a majority on council.
Okay.
And also in parks. And at least a significant stake, if not a majority, in schools. But it is a coalition. So if we found ourselves with less than half of the seats, for example, on council, we want to be in a position where our ideas are compatible with other people and we can find partners that we can work with because it is a coalition.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm nearing the end of my questions.
Sure.
And you said that we can expect the rest of your platform shortly.
We're releasing it. We do something pretty much every week. So we're releasing it. We work with our strategist and out releasing information every week. But we do have an overall. But essentially, the major issues that are facing Vancouver. One big issue is a thing called livability.
Mm.
That's basically you can put them all under the same umbrella. And what that relates to is things like transit. We want to find solutions that are based on what people need. Housing, we want to be able to provide a context where housing is more affordable on both the purchasing and on the rental side so that there are more options there. Cost of living, also we want to have more coherence and more accountability on how the money is spent because, like I was saying, the debt load of the city is more than doubled. It has doubled under Vision. And the expenses are 61% higher than they were when they got to power, even though the population has grown barely a little over 6%. So those are the main things. But there's a fourth one, which is even probably the most important, but a longer-term one, is a thing called sustainability, unfortunately. And this one thing that we've heard from some other planners that Vancouver is becoming more and more of a what they call a hedge city. A hedge city is where wealthy people from somewhere else will buy a place here because it's sort of a nice place to live. It's kind of a hedge, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not sustainable. We have to provide a city whereby our young, industrious people that are starting careers and starting businesses, that they can see a future, that they can stay here, that they can make their livelihoods here, develop their businesses here. See a way, and part of that is they have to have a path to ownership. Ownership is something that's important. And the long term, that's important because sustainability means you have to have a tax base, demographics. People have to have children, they have to have businesses, they have to have a tax base to keep the city going so that 20 years from now, we don't have a city that looks like Monaco. We want to have a city that is much more balanced and sustainable.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening. This interview was conducted and edited by Alex DeBoer, with research by Adeline Peng and Alex DeBoer. Special thanks to CITR 101.9 FM.
Hey there, it's Alex DeBoer here. Please keep listening because we have a bonus 5-minute interview with Peter LaBrie to share with you. Following our original interview, we felt it necessary to call him back and ask about one final issue. Yesterday, August 15th, both he and party frontrunner Wei Young retweeted a post from the handle Nico, which says, and I quote, "In Vancouver, if you stay clean, study, borrow, finish university, get a job, and pay taxes, you'll be rent evicted to Surrey. But if you're crazy, a crackhead, or a criminal, you get a free apartment in an expensive neighborhood. We call this social justice." End quote. And the image attached is of a temporary modular housing suite from the City of Vancouver's website. I asked Peter why he felt it important to retweet this message and whether it conflicts with his party's self-described progressive approach on social issues. I was wondering about a recent retweet that says, in Vancouver, if you stay clean, study, borrow, finish university, get a job, and pay taxes, you'll be rent evicted to Surrey. But if you're crazy, a crackhead, or a criminal, you get a free apartment in an expensive neighborhood. We call this social justice. And I noticed that you and Wei Young retweeted this. So I'm wondering if you wanted to comment on that.
No, it's a tweet from a guy called Nico. He's kind of controversial. He's out there and he tweets stuff like that. I just thought it was interesting because it's provocative. Yeah.
Okay, because it's the images of a temporary modular home from the City of Vancouver's website.
I think that's what it is. Something down and on in near Chinatown. Yeah.
Right. So, do you think the temporary modular homes being built by the city are too lavish?
Well, I just thought it was an interesting tweet. I don't.
Okay, I'm just wondering why you thought it was interesting.
Well, I thought it was interesting because it highlights the question of that it's difficult for basically people that are trying to get ahead in the city in terms of paying their rent and getting skills and working and paying taxes. And sometimes those people get taken for granted. They have to move further out to get by because they cannot find reasonable rental in the city.
Right.
Well, that's basically what the tweet says.
Yeah, it just seems to maybe be not very empathetic to people who might be entrenched in drug addiction and experiencing homelessness.
And I guess the tweet, the focus of the tweet was that the system wasn't very empathetic to people that were doing their best to get ahead and were taking all the steps to do so.
Well, thank you for answering that.
Yeah, it's just a tweet. We just thought it was, I thought it was provocative.
Yeah, totally. I guess it's just interesting if Coalition Vancouver is trying to come off as a progressive party, if there are sort of like these critiques of sort of social justice values that social housing or temporary modular housing should be built.
Well, I think it's difficult for people like yourselves going to university. You get to spend 4 or 5 years getting a degree, when you graduate, it's difficult for you to earn enough money, at least at a starting level, to pay rent and do the normal things that people want to do, let alone be able to be in a position to purchase a unit or even rent a good unit. So that's one of the focuses that we're going to have going forward, and that is to provide a much broader pool of rental and a path to ownership for people that are a modest income.
Right. So I guess it's kind of a people kind of create their own lot in life type belief. Like people who are homeless or experiencing drug addiction, that's sort of their choice.
Well, I mean, homelessness is a complex problem. There's actually a study done, I think it was 2015. If you look at the homelessness, I'm just being called into my session here. If you look at homeless, you find it's a complex situation. You have a lot. You have vets in there. You have people that were recently working within 2 years. It's quite a large portion of the population. Then you have people that are psychologically challenged. and you have a number of also First Nations Indigenous people. So it's you have a lot of different aspects in homelessness, and there's no silver bullet. You have to look at, you know, a solution, a cocktail of different measures to deal with homelessness. The tweet is actually more about affordability for people that are trained, skilled, kind of done their best to get ahead and have difficulty getting ahead in Vancouver.
Yeah, I understand that. I guess it's just like the use of the words crazy, crackhead, and criminal that bring it into another realm.
It's a provocative tweet, and it's provocative because it provoked people to talk about it and to retweet it and people to ask questions about it.
And yes, and it accomplished that. I'll let you go. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Seeking Office is brought to you by CITR's News Collective and produced by Alex DeBoer. Our theme music is by Artem Bemba. Thank you for listening.